Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show. This is Michael West, and I'm here with my co-host from the southern wilds of Tennessee, Mr. Daniel Dart. How are you, Daniel?
How's it going tonight, Michael? It is going good down here. It's about 70 degrees, a little bit of overcast and everything tonight. I'm sitting out on the back deck with a cigar and, you know, getting ready to have a wonderful show. So,
well,
how much
you
better
go.
Can it be?
I'm in my fortress of solitude with some coffee with espresso rum in it.
All right.
So that's I got that. Got that from Hilton Head.
What type of rum?
It's strong,
is that?
By, you know. Well, I don't know really. There's a place called the Island Winery and Distillery on Hilton Head, and they make their own rum and vodka and whatnot, whiskey, and this espresso rum. It's really strong. It's got a really strong coffee espresso flavor to it. But it's really good. And you know what's really good is to have it over ice cream.
Yes. I've had some, not probably the quality that you've got right there, but I've had some over some ice cream and everything and enjoyed that tremendously.
Yes.
Over like a rum raisin ice cream that they poured, you know, just like a little shot of it over the top of it, which.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's some good stuff. So tell me about your weekend. I was writing all weekend, trying to get my newest novel done. So I had to skip out on this year's author's fair in the Louisville area, and this is the first one I've missed. So I was sad I had to miss out on seeing. Stephen and Holly and a lot of our friends. Stephen right now actually is giving a talk about the publishing world, so that is why he is AWOL this evening, and we are trying to pick up the slack.
He's giving it to an interesting group. If you remember what he was saying, it's a AARP group, I think, that he's giving a talk to on publishing and stuff. Which would be, that's my group, you know.
Well, you know,
want to admit it or not, I'm in that group. I mean, sorry.
Well, and when you think about it, you know, I remember when I was in high school, one of our assignments for government class was to interview like someone, you know, our grandparents or whatnot about what it was like in their time period or whatever. And so I interviewed my grandmother about, you know, her life during World War II here stateside and what, you know, she went through and whatnot. And it was really, really fascinating. I wish I still had that tape. I don't know what I did with that tape, but it was really, really neat to hear what it was like during that time, and I think that, you know, that it's a really good idea to get seniors involved in telling their stories and getting that out there, because, you know, it's once the greatest generation is gone, those stories are going to go with them. So we need to get those stories told and you know, educate ourselves about
One of these days I'm going to sit down and write mine, but that is for another lifetime, I believe.
What a knife skill. You know, you're no.
No, I'm trying to finish up number two and number three of that too, you know. So I understand why you stayed at home and wrote, because if I was honest with myself, that's what I should have done. But yeah, I went up to LaGrange and everything and hung out with everybody. We had the Hoffman and Glenn Porzig, you know, sit, you know, almost directly across the aisle from us, that we had, you know, sit there and fuss with all week, you know, all day Saturday. And it was me and Steven, you know, up there representing Seventh Star, with Holly running around talking to everybody. Because Holly never goes around and talks to anybody, you know, if you've ever met her. You know,
oh, no,
she's
no. No, she's
quite quiet and demure
quiet
most of the time. So.
And, of course,
so,
that event is put on by the wonderful Tony Acri.
Yes, Tony was up there running around, and his two girls were there and doing very well on getting their artwork and their writing and everything. You know, they're young girls, and they're, you know, excited about being creatives. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons we do this every week, is, you know, helping people become excited about being creative. Because
it's kind of like a way to, right. So, I mean, it's a way to recharge your batteries. And I know sometimes, you know, writing is a solitary act, and you're here and you're typing away at the keyboard, and or, you know, some people are still writing longhand, which, you know, my hat's off to them. I can't do it, but you know, but you're living in your own head. But you know, you're living in your own head.
I'm still writing my first draft longhand right now.
Oh, wow. Well, given your track record with the computer, that may be for the best.
Yes. You know, when it goes into the computer, and then I change everything and make it into a workable, you know, draft, then it, you know, that's when I have problems, you know, and decide to lose all of it and stuff. So. But as long as I keep all my little notes in my longhand, you know, on that first summoning draft and everything that I do, you know, that helps out a whole lot. So when I make stupid mistakes, like not backing up a computer, and, you know, it only takes me a few months to get all of it back then.
There we go. Well,
but,
I have some news. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Go ahead with the talking about the book fair.
I was just
going to
talk a little bit more about the book fair.
Yeah,
it was a good, you know, I left, you know, sunshine, 80 degrees in Tennessee. I go across the border into Kentucky. I wake up the next morning to 30 degrees and snow. I'm like, why the heck did I leave Tennessee? I'm not a snow person. No, I wake up and my car's covered in snow and everything. You know, by the time I got out there to it, it's covered in snow and everything. I'm like, what the hell? I was sitting at, you know, like I am tonight, sitting out on the back deck and everything, you know, writing just the day before, and, you know, get up there and it's snowing. Do you have a reasoning for that? Did you send that down to us, you know, telepathically
or
what?
I did not have anything to do with that.
I didn't know whether your dog ran across a Ouija board the wrong way or what, you know, but
it could be. But if he did, he did it, you know, when I was out of the room, and I apologize for that. But you know, when we went to, I went to see Hellboy, like not this last weekend, but the weekend before, and it was, you know, Palm Sunday in the middle of April, and we're coming back from the movie theater, and it's just pouring down snow. I mean, it's just, I'm like, it, you know, it looked like, you know, you're driving down the road, and it looks like you're warp speed in the Millennium Falcon. And it, I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is April. This is
and not the first
but, you know,
of April.
Indiana weather.
Just,
well,
no,
and I have to say though,
or fortunately,
I have to I have to say that I apologize to anyone listening who's trying to get into the chat room. On my end, it's saying that there is an error and the engineers have been notified. So I don't know what you guys are seeing, but if you guys are seeing a chat room, I'm not able to get into it. So I apologize for that. But supposedly the engineers have been notified, and they will get it fixed in most cases within seconds. So we'll see what happens.
Well, they've notified you, Michael. Get it fixed. You're the engineer.
Yeah. But, well, before we go too far, we're going to, this is a sponsored show now. So we have a message from our sponsor, and on the other side of that message, I will have some news of my own. So let us listen.
Hello, I'm Jo Lindstar, and I am the founder and organizer of Promo Day. Now, Promo Day is a whole day dedicated to promoting, networking, and learning that can be attended from the comfort of your own home and completely free of charge. Presentations by industry experts, opportunities to promote your work and services, and the possibility to network on a global level. This makes Promo Day a must-attend event. Join us on Saturday, 11th of May at www.promoday.net.
All right. So it's promoday.net for everybody out there. But, well, I've been given the go-ahead to go ahead and announce this, so I'm going to announce it. For everyone who has been pleading with me for years, I am finally going to have an audiobook edition. We're starting with the first book that was released through Seven Star Press, Cinema of Shadows. So I... today I was listening to the first few chapters that had been completed, and it is a surreal experience to hear your work translated into another medium. But it did happen. So that should be released very soon.
What's your first reaction to it, Michael? On hearing,
I thought it was amazing.
Somebody else's voice do your work.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing, and you know, the fact that she's the reader is doing all the voices and everything is great. It was really a cool experience, and I can't wait for everybody else to be able to enjoy it very soon. And it looks like we had our guests in the queue, and it looks like we've lost them. So hopefully they'll call back in here momentarily. So I do apologize for that. But all kinds of excitement going on. I know Steven's got some audiobooks coming out as well, and I look forward to hearing those. There's a lot of people
he had his collection books out on Ragnar and Raiden at the event Saturday. So,
oh, very cool.
The ones that he did only in ebook, the three novellas.
Right. Yeah.
In each one of them, he's got that first set on Ragnar and Raiden out in a three novella collection. In one book, and the artwork for the covers are in the book, separating out the
yes, yeah, and well, it's just really neat to to have you know, something that's been available in one medium only, and then to be able to put it into another medium, whether it be a print version of something that's only been available electronically, or your audiobook version. And a lot of people, you know, have only audio. You know, they like to listen to books on their way to work or whatnot, and it's just a good way to to do that.
I've got one in my CD player out there in the car right now that I'm listening to. I've got another one sitting there waiting for me to listen to it as soon as I get done with the one I'm listening to. So, yeah, that's how, I, you know, some people, they've got those things called Bluetooth and all that stuff in their cars. Yeah, mine didn't have that. I'm good to have the CD player. So.
All right.
But,
well,
have we got a guest yet?
I think we have. I think we have our guest. I think the guest has called back in. Eddie, are you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Eddie.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'll just fine.
All right. Yeah, Blog Talk Radio has a habit this evening of kicking everybody out. I know when I first called in today to try to get the show set up, it didn't like me being there either. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm speaking of Bluetooth. That's what I'm on right now. I'm on the road.
Okay.
I'm hearing you guys loud and clear.
Where are you headed to?
Awesome.
Headed home, actually.
Okay. I didn't know that you were headed to an event or something. Or.
No, I'm coming from one, just a small thing, and I'm headed home now.
So where were you?
I was doing music. I'm also a musician, and I was at a rehearsal.
Okay.
And it was one of those where. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we'll give you a proper introduction. This is Eddie Price, who is an artist from Northwest Georgia, and he's done amazing work. And so we're glad to have you here on the Star Chamber Show, Eddie.
Glad to be here.
And so you're not driving right now, are you?
Yeah, but I've got Bluetooth. It's the Georgia. It's the law. You have to have some kind of
hands
free. Yeah.
Oh.
It's a big
fine
too.
Yes.
And I'm
all right.
I'm fortunate. I do have Bluetooth. So.
All right. Well, we'll try not to be too distracting.
No, you're fine. I do this all the time.
All right.
Yeah, the Bluetooth. My wife's got Bluetooth
horn
in her car, and it works great. But down in Georgia, they passed. When did it go into effect? 2 months ago, or
a few months ago? Yeah, and they're. I don't know the numbers on if it's improved anything or not, but it's definitely got people thinking twice about texting and talking.
Yeah, they, you know, on that little fee that they decide they want to hand to them, everything slowed them down a little bit on that because they were dogmatic about it. They had signs out for months before that would ever went into effect, saying.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, they
you got this many days.
Yeah. Well, here in town, they just did a story this morning where they had like a virtual reality car set up that they took to local schools, and they had kids texting, and it showed them, you know, like running off the road and hitting virtual people and stuff like that, and it's kind of a scared straight kind of situation. So it's
right, well,
you know, they said that with some unbelievable like almost like 90% of all crashes involving teens involve distracted driving.
Mm-hmm. I believe
that statistic, but I'll tell you this. I'm a licensed social worker and counselor in mental health. And one thing I learned in college is about adolescence is it's called the personal fable. And that's the term used. And what that is when adolescents and teens are coming up, their frontal lobes are not fully formed yet until you're about 25. And you can have all the cautionary tales and virtual cars to show teens the dangers of that kind of behavior. But what the personal fable is, it's in adolescents and teens where they don't, basically personal fable means that'll never happen to me. That's
right.
Their mindset,
right.
Because it hasn't happened to them yet. And so they haven't been exposed per se, unless they've had someone close to them that something bad happened. So in psychology, like I said, it's called the personal fable. And you can give all the talks you want, but until they get a little taste of it, it's almost like the old hand burning the stove. You can tell the baby don't touch the stove, but some of us are more hard-headed than others, and we got to touch that stove to learn. And that's
right.
Sad, really, but I'm not negating in any way, shape, or form that's not a good thing to do, is to be out there and warn. You know, and when I was a kid, it was like Red Highway, you know, those reel-to-reel films,
right.
You know, that had wrecks and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But we also had that, hey, watch this.
Yeah, that's the Jeff Foxworthy. You might be a redneck if one of your relatives died right after saying that.
Right. it's like all the Jackass shows and whatnot.
Oh yeah. Well, I remember a trend for a while was like teenage boys jumping off rooftops and straddling like a chain link fence. I'm like, you know, that may be a way to weed those guys out, because I don't know if they'll ever procreate after that.
I don't remember that one, so, but yeah.
Yeah, for a while it was like, you could look it up on YouTube and just find thousands of videos of that.
Darwin Award things, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I don't know how we got up. I'll take the blame for us getting off on that, but yeah, it's funny.
Well, I know that.
So, what type of music do you play?
I actually do gospel and contemporary gospel. I used to be a rocker, and I did all the honky tonk type stuff, you know, and playing rock and juke joints and everything. And then I became a Christian. About this may have been 14 years ago, and so I still like to rock out. I do it with the Lord in mind when I do.
Okay. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I still go to concerts and things like that. Just last fall, I went and saw. I'm in my late 40s. So this is right up my alley. I went and saw a triple show. It was Edgar Winter Band, Deep Purple, and Alice Cooper.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And that was amazing.
I bet. Yeah, I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan, so that would be awesome.
Me and you both.
Me and Mike are both in our late 40s, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm the 20-year late 40s, but, you know.
Yeah. I'm about to celebrate the 30th anniversary of my 20th birthday, so.
There you go.
But
I celebrated
well,
that twice now.
Yeah, I'm a Toys R Us kid.
Yeah. I remember Children's Palace. You remember Children's Palace? Was that just an Indiana thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We had that down here.
Yeah. Well, Eddie, tell us a little bit about your work, and especially your 3D art.
Okay, well, it kind of ties in with what I was saying a minute ago. I was actually, I love to tell my story because I found that it challenges and inspires people that want to do what I do. Or, you know, they have some kind of designs or fantasy or dream of being an artist. Which I say, if you've ever drawn with a crayon, you're an artist. You know, our first art gallery is the refrigerator with a magnet, you know, and
right.
What you drew when you were a kid. But other than that, I never drew after that. When I got into my teens, I started experimenting with substances, you know, drugs and stuff, and I became a drug addict, and I was even a drug dealer. And that lasted for 18 years. And I was actually strung out. I was what you call a highly functional addict. But even with the highest functioning addicts, the drugs chip away at that eventually. And kind of like rocks crashing on the shore, you know, it erodes it. Well, finally I hit rock bottom, and I was going to check out of this world, if you know what I mean. And so I OD'd on purpose. And it didn't kill me. It should have. Well, then an hour later, I OD'd again. And that didn't kill me. And I was wondering why I was still on this earth, just miserable. Well, then, of all things, a church van pulled up to the dope house, as they call them, that I was in. And my wife, me and her were estranged at the time, and we just celebrated 23 years. We were going on 24, but this was 10 years into our marriage. We were estranged, and her and my brother and a preacher pulled up in that church van, and they held me accountable, which is exactly what I needed. And I'll try to make this as quick as possible because it does relate to the art. But long story short, I prayed what we call in the South the prayer of salvation. And I just gave it to God. And the cool thing was I had all those drugs in my system. I had four different drugs in my system. I stood up after the amen. I stood up sober and detoxed. I never had to go to rehab, ever. That this will make 14 years ago. And so I tell people this when I talk to them at conventions and things. I used to exist. Now I live. There's a huge difference in the two. And so with this new chance at life, it's like, you know, I really haven't lived in 18 years. I want to try some things I've always wanted to try but never did. So the first thing I did was I went back to school. And as I mentioned, you know, being a social worker and substance abuse counselor earlier, that's my way of paying it forward for people that are not, they're where I used to be. So then I answered the call into the ministry, and I'm actually an ordained pastor. Then about 5.5 years ago, I'm just saying, hey, this looks neat. I'll try this. So I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to try it. So my wife and daughter and I all went to our first comic book convention up in Nashville. And
hey!
Hey, shout out to Nashville. I've always loved comics. Like, I've always collected them. I've always loved the artists, kept up with who's what, who's the writer, who's the artist, especially the artist. I would be sitting in my bedroom reading and rereading the letters to the editor and reading what Stan Lee wrote back and things like that. And I've always loved all things, as we call it, geek culture. But I thought that was for other people. And so we're at this show, and I meet some legendary artists like Jim Steranko. I met him. And, you know, he's a legend. And, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nick Fury, things like that. And I met several other legendary artists. And some of them were nice enough that they listened to me geek out on them and fanboy on them a little bit. And I was kind of picking their brain the whole time. I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying new things. Why not R? And so my inner voice is arguing with itself, saying, well, you're 42 years old. You're too long in the tooth, as we say. What good is you trying to draw going to do? You know, you trying art. And then it was like, well, it'd be at least a healthy hobby, you know, a good thing to spend time on and learn and grow, you know, as a person overall. Mm-hmm. So I taught myself into trying it. So that night we left there, that on the way home, we stopped at our local Walmart and I bought a sketch pad and I bought some pens and pencils that I thought looked okay. And I started going online, looking up tutorial stuff on how to draw. And that's another thing with the internet, the advent of the internet, it's democratized things like music and art to learn without having to necessarily go to school. People ask me, did I go to art school? And I say, yeah, I'm a graduate of the University of YouTube, you know. And right. There's so many great free resources online that you can find to learn from. And so I started drawing every night at the dinner table. And about 3 weeks in, my daughter had met this guy that was from St. Louis, and he had an independent comic company out of St. Louis, and he had a table at that show. Well, they met. Well, she does cosplay, and he was hiring her to make her own costumes of his characters from his books that he's written and cosplay, and going to pay her to cosplay around the show, you know, walk around for a few hours, change,
yeah,
and be a different character to kind of promote his brand. Well, they're
right.
Skyping every day on the big screen in our living room. So I'm coming in every day from work going, oh, hey, Brad, you know, and then it dawns on me, they're sweet on each other. You know, it's more than her cosplay for this guy. So I'm like, are you sweet on this hunky stud or what? And she's like, no. Well, that means yes, you know. So in the meantime, about 3 weeks
like that,
after.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, about 3 weeks after that show, my daughter showed him on Skype. I was drawing like one picture a week, and I was real slow and deliberate and methodical about it. It was taking forever to draw anything. And so I had only drawn three pictures, one a week, and she showed him. And during the course of their conversation, he really liked it. And he said, how long has your dad been drawing? And she said, well, we met you about 3 weeks ago. And he goes, no, I mean the total time that he's done art. And she goes, he started the night we got home after we met you at that show. And Brad said, I don't believe it. Well, then she told him my story that I've told you guys, and he said, I tell you what, since you're coming to this show in Kentucky this coming weekend to cosplay for me, I'll pay your mom and dad's way, too, if he'll draw fan art at my table. So when I get home from work, she goes, Dad, you want to go to Kentucky? And I'm like, why? And she's like, Brad wants you to draw at his table. And I was like, I can do that? I mean, it was literally. And so then my wife gets home from work, and she gets home, and I said, hey, you want to go to Kentucky this weekend? Everything's paid for. And I get to draw at a show. And while our daughter cosplays, and she goes, okay. So we go. I have no idea how crazy that is. You know, I think, well, I guess that's how the comic industry works, you know. So I get there, and I'm terrified and elated at the same time, because by then I'd only drawn four pictures. I drew one the next week. And so I'm taking art requests from fans, and they're asking me for crazy stuff, you know, ups and things like that. And I'm terrified because what if I can't do it? What if I can't honor their request? And drawing it, and had a fantastic weekend, and I made some prints of the four pictures I've done, sold most of them, sold one of the originals that I had. And so as soon as that show was over, I said, okay, when's the next show? Because I think I want to do this for the rest of my life. And so I worked with Brad with his company for a little while, but then another wrinkle came. He asked me for my blessing. And if you're a dad, you know what that means if
yep.
you got a daughter. So
yep.
now he's my son-in-law. So they've been married about 3 years, and but it was one of those decisions where we both agreed that I would rather him be my son-in-law than a business partner of any kind to mix the
right.
two. You know, I didn't want to jeopardize anything in their young love, you know, so we made that decision. Well, then I started researching growing my brand that is me, and my wife was a huge help with that. And then other artists that I would meet on the convention circuit doing a few shows a year the first couple of years, they really were liking what I was doing, and they were very, very kind and gracious to mentor me and kind of take me under their wing. There's too many to mention of the people that have been so gracious in saying, hey, I believe in what you're doing, you know. So with that kind of support, that just spurred me on to be even more driven. And then the 3D art that you mentioned, I had that idea about 4 years ago. I just had this weird idea of what if I could layer the art into separate pieces so you could look around things from your angle you were looking at the picture. And then it was a few trips to Hobby Lobby and some experimentation. And now if you look up hashtag that 3D guy, you'll find me on the internet.
Awesome. Well, I know,
that's good.
I know that I know that in addition to, drawing at a table at conventions, you've also, worked for Tops and Upper Deck.
Yes, I still work for Upper Deck. I did Star Wars and The Walking Dead. And then Upper Deck, I do Marvel characters for them. And as a matter of fact, I've got like my 10th set of Upper Deck Marvel cards at home about halfway through, trying to hit that deadline. But it's a dream. And it was another one of those things where I saw another artist that I'm friends with. He was drawing it looked like a sports card. You know, you'll see like a baseball card or something, and he's drawing on it. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? And he's like, oh, I work for Upper Deck. And I'm like, you're drawing like Spider-Man. And he's like, yeah, Upper Deck does Marvel. And I was like, dude, are you serious? You know, and he goes, you want the email? And I said, yes, please. So I sent them an email, and they liked what I did and started sending me steady work over the past a little over 2 years now. And then I found out about Tops and Star Wars. That is my jam. And so it was
right.
I'll do some Star Wars cards all day long. Then it ended up Tops also asked me to do Walking Dead, and that's my wife's favorite show. So I couldn't say no to that. And I'm a fan of the show, too, but not like her. Another thing was I...
Has your drawing sped up any?
I'm sorry?
Has your drawing sped up any?
Oh, yeah. There was a leveling up that I had to do. One was drawing at a show. Like, if I'm going to draw at a show, it obviously can't take a week, you know. So, as I learn more and more, I develop what we call artistic shorthand, where there's things that you automatically do for that thing that you're drawing that's repetitious, and it varies because it's done by hand, but it's still there's a repetition there from practice and doing it over and over again. But then doing the cards, I really had to level up because I'll get like 50 cards and have a month to do them. But at the same time, I've got other freelance work that I'm doing for clients. You know, it could be local people
right.
or people I've met at the show that want something more in depth. So I'm juggling all that at once. So the first set I ever did, I was Ultra Spider-Man. for Fleer, the Fleer division of Upper Deck, and it was 50 cards. I'd never drawn a card. I'm calling every artist I know to, you know, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? And then it was like I would carry a backpack around with me everywhere I went, and I'd always have that stack of cards in there. So if I'm at my mom and dad's house, I'm, hey, how y'all doing? And I'm just pulling out my pencil case and a box of cards, and I'm sitting there drawing, you know. I took them on vacation, so I was like, I'm not going to miss this deadline and mess it up, and I know this is going to be rough having to draw all this because there's a tedious process. For example, Upper Deck, they always want their cards in full color, and I'm doing pencils, then inks, then colors, you know, and I usually split it up into four stages, and because there's a little ink after the colors, so one card can take, depending on the detail, can take several hours, and then it's like, who else can I draw? Because, you know, you get about 20 cards in, and you're like, I can't think of any more characters. So then it's time to go online and just look up Marvel characters or Star Wars characters or vehicles or something, you know, and go, okay, yeah. And then I was making all these lists and then crossing them off. And then about three sets in, all that went out the window. I'm like, okay, I'm used to this gig now, you know. But, yeah, you definitely level up with that. And I'm glad for it, too, because it helped me at shows be faster. So, because the faster I draw, the more commissions that I can take in on like a 2-day or a 3-day show. And
right.
It's nothing uncommon for me to, even now, because I can do 7 or 8 commissions, no problem at a show, like a 2-day. But I'm taking artwork to the hotel, you know, on Saturday night. And I'm drawing while if my wife's with me, she's asleep, you know. And I've got something on because I got ADHD, so I've got like Cartoon Network on or something in the hotel, and I'm sitting there drawing away till like 3 or 4 in the morning. Then it's time to go. You know, I mean, the conventions are so much fun, but they're a lot of work, you know. Anybody that's ever done a convention or two will tell you, you know, you got the drive, you know, however long that's going to be, then setup time. Then you put on that big smile and go, hey, you know, and then you have people go,
yeah,
did you draw this? That's my favorite question. Did you draw these? And I'm sitting there drawing.
Like, you know, I get that too. It's like I'm standing behind a table with all my books. And like, did you write these?
Yeah. Well, then the follow-up question is, all these?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It got to the point where my wife told one guy, he said, did you draw these? And she goes, I said, yes. And he goes, all these? And she said, no, he draws that half of the table, and I draw everything on this half. And I'm like, Kathy, be nice. But it's a chance to educate people that don't know what goes into the art. Because another big thing that happens is you got people, and I don't have anything against anyone that's like flipping stuff, you know, like posters and things like that. But you've got a lot of people that they don't understand genuinely why your stuff is, say, $150 for an original picture, and they can go get a Captain America poster for $20, you know. And so you get a chance to educate the public at large on, okay, well, this is handmade, and this is how many hours went into it, and so I don't look down on anybody that's ignorant of that. It's a teachable moment, you know.
Right.
Are you doing anything this weekend?
No, not this weekend, but next weekend I'll be at a show in Tupelo, Mississippi.
I didn't know whether you were going to be coming up to Clarksville to the Comic-Con up there or not.
No, but I'll be at the show up there in Kentucky. What is it?
Imaginarium?
Yeah, Imaginarium. I'll be there. When is it? In the fall?
That's in October.
Yeah, October.
October, I apologize. I have so many shows now. I usually do about 26 a year.
I was just,
and I can't keep up.
Okay, that was my next question, was about how many shows you do a year. So you do 26 a year.
Yeah, the past 2 years have been 26. And the thing is not all of them are great shows, but
right.
I want to get the number the same, but have great shows every time. I could tell you some stories. I've got a friend of mine. He's been in the business a lot longer than I have. He's one of my mentors. And I'll come home from a crazy show and tell him what all happened. And he's been telling me for like a year now. He's like, you need to write a book just about your experiences at some of these shows. He said, because some of the stuff you come back tell me, I have never seen before. And I've been doing this a lot longer than you have. And I'm like, well, maybe you pick better shows than I do. I don't know. You know.
Yeah. You could call it con man.
Yeah. Well, that's what my church calls me. They call me the con man.
Okay.
I'm kind of the resident artist at my church. And then our head pastor, I'm pastor of evangelism at our church, and our head pastor, he put that moniker on me. Because I'm always referring to conventions as con, so that was low hanging fruit for him, but it kind of stuck.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, the 3D art. When I had the idea, I'd never seen it before, but I just thought it'd be a neat thing to try. And the first one I ever did, I did a Superman, and it was him floating majestically in the sky. And behind him is multi layers of the city skyline and a dark, dark colored background like the sun had just set.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just him and then a few skyline layers and then the back. And I hung it on the wall in my office and I just kept looking at it. And the more I looked at it, the cooler it got to me and the more I liked it. And I'm like, I need to do another one. Well, then a local guy, he saw it. I posted it on Facebook and, He wanted to buy it, and I was like, oh, okay. So I sold it to him, and so I thought maybe there's a market in this for this 3D kind of art. And about a year into it, this guy out of San Diego, he contacted me through Facebook and said, welcome to the club. And I was like, what club? And he's like, the 3D art club. And I was like, cool, you know, that's great. And he started showing me his version of 3D art, which he does it totally different than I do, but I really liked it, and he liked mine. And then he said, you're number 8. And I said, 8 of what? He said, in the world. And I was like, there's only that many of us professionally doing this? And he's like, yeah. And I thought, well, that's even cooler, you know, because – that means that I've got a nice niche. You know, even though people may not know me, they see my art. And I don't know how every single show that I do, people will walk by and they do a double take. They look, they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen Pennywise from the movie It before. And then they keep looking and walk and everything's shifting in their viewpoint as they look. And then they like, whoa, wait a minute. And then they come closer. And then, they ask me how it's done. And I usually say ancient Chinese secret or they come up with all these theories on how I do it. And it's really funny hearing some of them because I'm like, man, that's way too complicated. I'd never do it that way. But one of the coolest moments, I'm a huge Mike Grell fan, if you know who that is. Grell, he was big in the 80s with like Green Arrow and Green Lantern. Well, one of my first favorite comics ever was The Warlord, you know, if you've ever read that one, DC. And so he's at a show and he walks over to our table and he's talking to my wife. And I did like a realistic Pennywise, the Tim Curry version, in 3D, and he's down in the storm drain. It's all separate layers, like he's looking at you from inside the storm drain. And he's talking to my wife, and I'm talking to a customer. Well, when the customer walked off, my wife said, I need to introduce you. And she goes to say his name, and I cut her off. I said, I know who he is. And she goes, oh, I said, you're the only one that don't know him. I said, I'm a huge fan of yours. I said, I've watched your artwork since The Warlord, man. And he's like, thank you very much. He said, I'm a fan of yours. And I'm like, okay, you need to stop because you're going to make me cry, okay? And he's like, no. Right. He said, this, the 3D is breathtaking. And I was like, you know, you're getting me in the feels, as the kids say now. And so he was telling me, he said, I especially love this Tim Curry Pennywise. He said, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I did the storyboard art for the 1990 movie. And I'm like, good Lord, man, you just went up another notch in my book, you know. And so I actually got to go out to dinner with him that night and stuff. So the 3D art, and the reason I said all that is, one, it's really cool that I got to hang out with him. Two, the 3D art gets me – there's lots of people that draw comic art, and they do it really well, better than me. But the 3D art gets me in places where they don't get into necessarily. And it's because it's so different. And even Mike Grell, as many conventions as he's been in over the years, he said, I've never seen anything like this. So I hear that all the time, and I love it when I hear it, because that means I'm doing it right as far as career-wise. And I recently, I don't know if you guys have looked online at any of it, but I had been wanting to incorporate LED lights into the 3D art. And then when Avengers Infinity War came out, I'm a huge Thanos fan. And so when it came out, it just inspired me. Like, you know what? I'm going to do Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet, but it's going to light up. And so that was a whole nother figure out how to do it, you know. Get the materials, work on it, figure out what's going to work, what's not going to work. And I always tell people will ask me for advice about, you know, how do you make this work? How do you make that work? I'm like, look, if it don't matter what you use, if the end result is something that works. And I tell people, if you need to use a duck-billed platypus to get the job done, go for it. Just don't ask to borrow my platypus. You know.
So does the addition of the LEDs affect the 3D aspect of it at all?
Oh yeah, it's I had a guy was looking at all my art, and that's the only one so far that I've done with lights. And I had one of the Predator, and he really liked it. And he said, "Could you turn the lights on that one?" And I said, which one? He said, that Predator. I said, that don't have lights in it, you know. But then at the same time, there's something different about that one, and I explained it to him, and it was a part of the picture he never noticed. Like if you see in the Predator movies where he cloaks, you know, he turns invisible, but there's like a, what is it they call it, a Fata Morgana, optical illusion where you see something in the air, but you can't make it out.
Right, the shimmer.
I actually used the jungle background, huh?
Like a ripple.
Well, I used, exactly, like heat waves on the highway. I used the background art that I had done of the jungle, and I took and I cut it out in the shape of the Predator's waist and legs, and so when you don't see it. He's half disappeared is what the goal was.
Oh, wow.
And so when you move your head side to side, then all of a sudden you see the shape of his legs, but it's the jungle piece. And so each there's something different about it. Like for one, I did the new Pennywise, the Bill Skarsgård version. I'm a huge Pennywise fan, and I did it. And I did it the same way I did the original in the storm drain. And I even did the paper boat with SS Georgie on it and everything as a separate layer. Well, then when I got looking at it, it just didn't look near as good as the Tim Curry version. So I thought, I'm going to have to rethink this. And that was before the movie came out. All I had reference-wise to draw from was a photo from Entertainment Weekly when they finally unveiled what the new Pennywise looked like. And so when the movie came out, of course, I went and saw it opening night, and there's a scene with balloons in it that really stood out. Where he's confronting Eddie Casbrek at the old house on Neibolt Street. And I thought, that's it, the balloons. So I took the same art, and then I did balloons all, like, he's hidden in a bunch of balloons that are kind of framing his face and torso. But for a little added bonus, I used real string on the balloons. So, just anything I can think of that that gives that piece a special something. And then I only do 10 of each piece. Like, I'll do the original art, and then I'll make prints of it, and then I'll do the layering, because I'll have to use multiple prints to make multiple pieces of the same object. And so I only do 10 of each one, and then they're gone forever. They're retired. But each one of the 10 is going to be different, because I'll move something around, or maybe I'll have Spider-Man, and this time, you know, number 3 of 10, he's got a word bubble, and he's saying something like it's off the comic page, or the other guy in the picture, he's saying something on the next one. You know, so each one, no two are alike at all. So that's another thing that makes them even more unique.
So you have one of 10, you actually have one of one each time.
Exactly. If two people that bought the same one compare theirs, they're going to go, oh, mine's different than yours, you know. Because I do them one at a time, and when I do the one at a time, I play with the composition of everything, and it can change just from human error, because you can't do the same thing exactly every time. But then there's like what mood I'm in at the time when I'm making that particular piece might make me go, you know what, I'm going to put 3 Klingon ships in this one instead of 2 that I did for the last one. Something like that, you know. So they're you're right. They're one of 10, but they're one of one. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, like you're talking about your alien and everything earlier, you know, and the lights and stuff. It would be, you know, one of them that I think would be cool is, you know, where he has that thing that comes up over his eye and everything that turns red for his laser.
The triple laser beam.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was small
in the works.
LED lights.
Yeah, that one's in the works. I did a podcast with a guy. He does nothing but Predator collectibles and everything Predator. And I was at a show a few months ago, and he interviewed me there live at the show. And he was like, man, he wanted the Predator one. He's eventually going to get one. But then he's like, have you ever thought of doing just the Predator's head and having light? And I'm like, yeah, the lasers, yeah. It's the same as what you're saying. But I have so many people, it's so cool to see when they look at my art, it excites their imagination. And they're doing what you just did and going, hey, have you ever thought about trying this and trying that? And I just love to hear that, because that means they're really into it. You know, they're... You know, like you see your favorite baseball player, you want to do them well. You want them to do well. It almost feels like that's the love I'm getting from the fan. They want to see. You know, there's a separate. It's different with that than somebody that comes up to an artist and kind of sarcastically or haughtily says, "You know what you should draw." You know, that's one thing. But when somebody goes, "Hey man, have you ever thought about this?" And that you can tell their wheels are turning, you know. I have a buddy of mine, he works for a Cartoon Network. I'll unveil a new piece like on Facebook, and he'll hit me up on Facebook Messenger, and he'll be doing the same thing. Hey man, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about that? And it's always exciting to hear people's gears turning, you know, when they see it. It's making them think.
Got about 30 seconds left in the live show. If you want to give people links or where to find you,
You can go to eddieprice.net, and that's my website, and it has links to everything social media. Or you can just hit hashtag that 3D guy and the number 3, and the rest are letters, and you can find me that way too. But the easiest way is just do eddieprice.net, eddieprice.net. And you can find my T-shirts. You can find my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff.
Very good.
Very
good.
Cool.
I have to ask this question. What is a commission cost for the different types of arts that you do?
It depends on how many characters. It depends on how much work I'm confident it'll take, but I usually will go the distance. If somebody gets, I kind of do this. Somebody was telling me, I'll say this as quickly as possible. Somebody was telling me, they said Henry Rollins, the rocker, he was a punk rock guy. He said he was opening for a legend, and the legend said, asked him, said, "Is anybody out there? Did anybody show up to the concert?" And he said, "Are you kidding me? There's 19,000 plus out there." And he said, "Well, I don't know if anybody's going to show up or not. I never know." And the interviewer said, "Who was this?" He said, "It was Ozzy Osbourne." Like, are you kidding? You're worried about people not showing up to your show? Well, I'm the same way in the art. Whenever somebody commissions me for small, medium, or large piece, I want to make sure that they come away going, "Hey, this is above and beyond what I asked for." And so I always pour everything I've got into it to make sure that they come away with going, "Man, this is so above my expectations." And so when I do that, I can sleep at night, I guess you could say.
Yep.
Right.
Well, I knew when your shows you did commissions, I didn't know, you know, whether you have, you know, a set price that like shows that you do like a simple commission, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, I have set prices
like
for that. Yeah. Yeah, usually it's like if somebody wants a sketch cover, it's $50 for one character. I'll turn you into a zombie for $50. I'll take your picture and then zombify you. And that's fun to do. It's fun to see their face light up and they're going, "Holy cow, that's me, and I'm a zombie," you know. And I do those
yeah.
shows. Trading cards, $50. I do $50 per character across the board because it makes the person that's weighing the decision, makes that that much easier for them to say, "Okay, let's do it," you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Oh, cool.
Well, is there, we've had a lot of good stories from you tonight. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to?
Not that I can think of. I'm still getting used to interviews, and believe me, I'm having a blast doing them. But like right now, you know, the glamour of, "Oh, I was on a podcast being interviewed." I'm sitting in Walmart parking lot right now.
it's the
life of the artist.
Exactly.
I'm sitting out on my back deck. I mean, it's the same difference.
Right. Red carpet. My cigarette has one of those long stems like Cruella de Vil, and I've got my ascot on. But you know,
love it.
I have so much fun doing this, and it's so funny. Like people, when they'll hear my story, they'll say, "Well, you know, imagine if you had done this, you know, you've only been drawing this long, 5.5 years, you know, currently. Imagine if you'd started this when you was a kid." And I'm like, "No, why waste time in what ifs? That's wasted energy.
Right.
Why not put all my energy into being the best I can be now?" And I wouldn't, you know, there's lots of things that I did that were, but I was a bad guy, you know, back in those days for 18
right.
years. But there was a reason for it in the long term. So I can use that bad to inspire people because of the good that has followed over the past 14 years. One of the big milestones that I can't wait is when the 18 years of the drugs and debauchery are matched and, you know, matched and then gone past year-wise of me being clean and sober, you know. Because right now it's going on 14.
Right.
So when I hit that 18 year mark of being clean, I'm getting so drunk. No, I'm kidding. That would be like the guy that jogs to the bowl of jelly beans. You know what I mean? Hey, I jogged.
Yeah.
I'm going to reward myself with some Doritos, you know. But yeah, I look forward to that. To me, that'll be a big milestone is when I hit that. The years are even, the bad and the good, you know. And I can't thank God enough for how much he's blessed me. I mean, there's so many times that I'll get to meet people who are my heroes in the art game. You know, I met Joe Rubenstein. You know who that is, right? And I had been drawing for about 2.5 years at the time, and we were back to back. He was facing the opposite aisle that I was facing. And during the show, he said, hey, you want to do some collaboration? I like your style. And my wife she's uninitiated in the art world. And I said, Joe Rubenstein just asked if he wanted me to ink some of his, or if he wanted me to ink, to pencil something and him ink it, excuse me. And her reaction was, well, that's cool. I'm like, you have no idea, you know.
You don't know how cool that is.
Right.
Yeah, it's Joe freaking Rubenstein, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like I'll go up to, you know, I'll come back to my table at a convention after I've just met somebody, and I tell my wife, hey, I just met, you know, so-and-so. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, I'm like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, if it's Walking Dead, she's all over it, you know. But, like,
right.
But then there's things like being commissioned by some of those, some of the celebrities I met, they like what I did enough to commission me to do some stuff for them. And that's, to me, that's high praise because they see it all doing conventions like I do. And so if they like my art out of everybody's, I feel like I'm on the right path. And then just being a fan, first off, like I said, Star Wars is my jam. I've been very fortunate to get original art autographed by some my favorite character in all of Star Wars, and it's so cool that he's coming back, is the Emperor, and who is played by Ian McDiarmid. And I got to meet him last year, and I did this really cool Emperor throwing lightning, and I got him. I paid for it. I'd pay double. I don't care. And I got a picture with him. I got him to sign my original. Or having somebody like Roy Thomas, you know, creator of Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and you know, great Morbius, having him sign my art, and him. The last show I was with him at, he's my buddy. I said, if I draw Iron Fist, had just come out on Netflix, and it was kind of like what I was saying earlier. I see Roy Thomas. I'm watching the first episode. I see Roy Thomas' name, and I'm like, yeah! I'm in my living room cheering.
Right.
But it's kind of like, I'm one of those people, like, if you're winning, I'm winning too, because I believe in what you do. And so I saw him at a show after the Netflix show had come out, and I'm like, hey, man, if I draw Iron Fist, you going to sign it for me? He's like, oh, yeah. And so he put, he wrote, may the fist be with you on it. And I still got that.
Those are up for sale, right?
Some of them are. And there's some that they're on my wall at home I will not part with. Like I did a Hellboy and Ron Perlman.
I'm talking about like
and,
the Emperor one and the Iron Fist one. Those are up for sale, right?
They are. They actually are. And my wife says I'm nuts. I'm like, I
the
can't keep everything. Yeah, they're signed. I've got a Boba Fett that Jeremy Bullock signed. It's for sale. And, you know, that's the original Boba Fett. And it was his last show he'll ever do. It was a Fanboy in Knoxville, Tennessee, last year. He retired after that. His health's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've got his signature on a cool Boba Fett. Then I've got a Darth Maul that Ray Park signed. It's for sale. I've got a bunch of autographed art. I've got a really cool Bruce Campbell as a Deadeye, you know, in Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him, and he went to sign it, and he starts signing his name at the bottom, and he says, "Is this your art?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "It's really good. I'm fixing to mess it up." And I went, "What?" And he had a silver Sharpie. He just started putting silver highlights in the hair, like squiggles all over the hair. And I didn't know what to say to the guy. Well, then he handed it back to me. He shook my hand. He goes, "This is really good work. I had to do that, though." And I just said, "Okay," and walked away. Well, then I kind of polled all my artist buddies. I'm like, because I got to looking at it, and I thought, you know, I could re-ink that hair, and his signature would still be there, but little silver squigglies would be gone. And every single artist that I asked said, "Don't you dare change that." They said, "That is really cool. That's a cool story that goes along with the piece." And I've had some people that will listen to my story because I love to tell it, and they'll buy my early stuff, the stuff where I look at it now and go, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe they let me in a show." And but they want to buy the early stuff because of the story that goes along with it of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very touching.
Well, yeah. I've got a hanging right here by my head. I've got a Christine movie poster that was signed by Carpenter and some other people. But the guy that played Buddy signed it. And he asked me, he said, do you want me to write anything special to you? And I said, why don't you write, "Is this your lunch?" You know, like what he says to, and he's like, "Oh,
in the shop class."
In the shop class. Yeah. He's like, "Is this your lunch?" You know, So he writes it, and then he hands it to me, and he goes, "So what's that mean?" I said, "What do you mean, what's that mean? Like, is this your lunch?" I said, "That's your line from the movie. Is this your lunch?" He goes, "Oh, did you read it?"
He forgot.
Like, "Well, no, he wrote, Mike, is the sure lunch."
And I wouldn't
and
change
I'm like,
that.
Oh, maybe I should have enunciated better. I don't know.
Right. Well, I tell you, speaking about John Carpenter, Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna, he felt bad that he ruined my poster. I said, no, because now I got a story to go with it. I said, don't worry about it at all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I met John Carpenter last year at a show up in New Jersey, and he was a super nice guy. And actually got to be in a private signing with me and three of my friends. We're in a private signing. They kind of quartered off the gym of the hotel where the show was, and it was just him and his agent and the four of us. And, man, you talking about cool. Cause when it comes to directors, it's him and Ridley Scott. They don't get no better in my book. Those are my favorites. I mean, Blade Runner is my favorite movie ever. That's Ridley Scott.
Right.
But Carpenter, he signed – I did a Michael Myers with his knife, and you know how he does his head cocked like a dog that just heard a weird
right.
noise? I did just the head and shoulders of Michael Myers and for my wife. And so I've already had Tyler Mane has signed it, and then Dick Warlock, who played Michael Myers in Halloween 2, which is my favorite Halloween movie. He both of them have signed it. Well, Carpenter signed it. And then I did a picture. If you remember the scene in the movie, The Thing, where the guy's having a heart attack and his chest opens up when they're using the paddles on him.
Right.
The scene where his head has come off and it's laying sideways on the floor and a tentacle comes out of his mouth. I did a still of that. That's my favorite scene in that whole movie. And so I did him with a tentacle coming out of his mouth, and Carpenter signed that. And it's for sale, too. I'm not trying to be a used car salesman, but my wife said, "Are you actually going to sell that?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I mean, I've got the moment where I got to hang out with John Carpenter. You can't take that away from me.
Well,
I can't sell it.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't buy it. But
it's funny because I usually have people make stuff out to me because I'm hanging it in my office and whatnot. So
right.
It's like most of my stuff is like to Mike, you know. And but my sons have this all figured out because my youngest son, he turns to my oldest son. He goes, "You realize when Dad dies, I get all his stuff." He's like, "What are you talking about?"
Right.
He goes, "Well, everything's made out to Mike, and my middle name is Mike, so it all goes to me."
Well, you know, and some celebrities, they will only personalize, you know.
Right.
Some of them, like
Gene
Simmons.
I've joked with a couple of people, I said, just make it out to eBay.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, the first time I ever got anything signed, I've had Ray Park, who played Darth Maul in Star Wars, I've had him sign two things for me, and at two different times, both of him as Darth Maul. And the first time, I had planned it out because I would go to a show, and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize they were going to be – I was too busy trying to get everything ready for the show. I didn't really look at
right.
all the guests that were going to be there. And then I would get there unprepared, you know, like some comic artist is there and I've got his comic books. I could have got him to sign and they're still at home. I forgot. I didn't bring them, you know, or something like that. So
right.
I had planned it out. I'm like, Ray Park is going to be at the show. I'm going to draw Darth Maul and then I'm going to take it, get him to sign it. Then I'm going to flip it on eBay, like what you're talking about. And when I got there, I had heard stories about celebrities that will only personalize things. Because they don't want you to sell it and profit off their name. And
right.
So I walk up, and he goes, "This is really cool." And I said, "Thank you, man." I said, "You're one of my favorite Star Wars characters." And he said, now, he had learned my name and my wife's name, and, you know, he's a very charming, very personable guy. And he said,
right.
"Now, do you want me to sign this to you, or are you wanting to sell it? Either way is fine with me." Well, I had planned up until that moment I was going to sell it. When he said that, I just went, "There's no way I'm selling this, dude," you know. And
yeah.
So he put it to me. It's on my wall now, and I'll never sell it. But it was
right.
just one of those, you know, split-moment decisions. I'm like, there's no way I can sell this. This is the first celebrity autograph I've ever gotten of my artwork, of them, you know. How can I sell that?
Right.
But then, like,
right.
I was at a free comic book day at a store several years ago, and I was across from three guys who are recurring zombies on The Walking Dead. Like, they'd be in lots of episodes. And we talked all day. And one of them said, "Hey, could you draw me as a walker?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He said, "I really like your style." And a lot of us get artists to do promo art for them. And, he said, I would love it if you could draw me. I've never had anybody draw me." And I said, "Man, I'd be honored." So I drew him. And when I got done, the other two guys contacted me. Apparently he had shown them. They said, "We're next." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I got two more. Well, then I draw. Then it goes through the grapevine. And it's all these recurring walkers on the show. They're like, "Hey, can you draw me next? Hey, can you draw me next?" And so then I'm up to about 10. Well, like I said, my wife's favorite show is The Walking Dead, you know,
right.
hands down. Well, we have this little thing. There's another married couple that's friends of ours. We're all Walking Dead fans. And Sunday night after church, we go eat dinner, or they come to our house and eat dinner, and we watch the show. So Friday, I get invited to a cast and crew party down in Atlanta that's about hour and a half from us to watch, you know, the episode where you find out who Negan's going to kill, the season opener.
Right.
I get invited to this cast and crew party in downtown Atlanta to watch it with cast and crew. So I'm like,
oh, wow.
Of course I'm going, you know, but my wife and I
oh,
are
yeah.
sitting in my office on Saturday afternoon. And I said, "I got invited to a party." And she said, what party?" I said, "It's tomorrow night." And she said, "Eddie, now you know good and well we're going to Jake and Angie's tomorrow night to watch The Walking Dead." And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's right." She said, "What kind of party is it?" I said, "Oh, it's a Walking Dead party." And she said, what kind of Walking Dead? Where's it at? I said, down in Atlanta. And she's like, what is it? And I said, it's like 30 of the cast and crew, but you know what? You're right. We promised Jake and Angie we'd be at their house to watch the show. And so, you know what? I'm a man of my word. And she's like, I'm texting them right now to give them a rain check. We're going. And I'm like, no, you were right. We got to go, Jake. And I just messed with her. And she's like, you need to shut your mouth. And so she was in hog heaven. You know? We're sitting there watching the show with cast and crew. So my stock went up a few points with my wife, you know.
Yeah.
But now it's like,
yeah.
That was another leveling up talent wise and work ethic wise. Is if you look at any of that, the Walker art that I do online, it's very, very detailed, like hours and hours of I'm almost sculpting on paper. It's and to get it right. And so that made me level up too to what I do. That's it's comic style, but it's hyper realistic comic style, and that's right. Why I like Mike Grell. When I met him, he immediately could see that the Pennywise I drew was Tim Curry. You know, one guy I did a RoboCop, and it was so funny. The guy said, "You even got the Peter Weller pout," and it was the way his lips are kind of big, Peter Weller's are.
Right.
And that's all you see. Right. You know, the visor's covering the rest of his face. But he called it the Peter Weller pout. He said, you nailed it. And I was like, thank you. But yeah, I pride myself on realism.
Question for you. Did your wife make you do the 10 that you had already done over again on a big poster so that she could have each one of them sign it while she's there?
No, but she gets something out of the deal. Anytime somebody from the show wants me to draw for them, I say, can I have a reference photo? Or they offer one of their official AMC photographs that they sell at shows. And they'll go, why don't I just give you one of these? Pick which one you want to draw, or they'll pick. And I'll go, oh, could you sign it? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, could you make it out to Kathy? So she reaps the dividends from that, you know. So they're all over her walls. My office is they're across the hall from each other, our offices. And hers is nothing but zombies. And it's all my art, AMC photos of different. We've actually had me and two of the guys from the show. We actually started doing shows together as a trio. They said, look, you're our official artist from now on, which I was very flattered. And one of them had the idea. He said, if I get us into a show as a triple deal, would you want to do it? I'm like, shoot, yeah. Well, the first show we did, the last day on my day job was that day, and then I went home to get ready to go to that show with them, and we had so much fun. And so
you had a double banger that night, didn't you?
Oh yeah, drove to Hazard, Kentucky, and that was a long drive. But what I ended up doing is there's a scene if you're Walking Dead fans, there's a scene where Rick and Michonne are at this carnival. And they're trying to kill a deer to eat it. And a bunch of walkers get it first. And well, both those guys are in that scene eating the deer. And so I had already drawn them individually from other scenes. And they said, can you draw us in a picture together? And so I found that. And I was like, that's perfect, because they had the same color schemes and blood, you know, where they've been eating that deer from the mouth down and all that stuff. And so it just fit. So I drew them together. Well, so what we did was, and this is so funny. What we did is we went up to that show. Well, then we did a show in Indiana, and we did this triple deal for X amount of dollars. You get my art of them. You get one of their AMC photos each. And we all sign everything that we had a part of. And then you take a picture with us. The fan gets a pic, you know. So I'm sitting there drawing, and we did this in one day. We did that deal like 40 times in one day, and it was like from 8:30 in the morning to, I think, 10 that night, and it never did stop, really. And, I mean, we were having so much fun with the fans. Yeah. And so it'd be like one of the – we got another combo deal, you know, like I'm at McDonald's cooking. You know, I need a Big Mac, you know. And so every time it'd be photo op time, I'm sitting there drawing, and they're like, okay, Eddie, it's photo op time. And I'm like, look, guys, I'm not on the show. I'm just drawing you guys and drawing for Tops, you know, in that regard with The Walking Dead. And finally, Ben, one of the guys, he said, get over here and make a zombie face now. You know, he was tired of hearing it. So I'm over there, and I go, I do the pose. I'm like, rawr, you know, and then I'm like, can I go back to drawing now? So the next year, the other one calls me. He said, hey, I got some more shows lined up. And I was like, cool. And he said, if you want to. I said, I'm in. If I've got that date open, count me in. And he said, can you draw us again? And I'm like, yeah, I can draw you again. I said, have you got anything in mind? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, remember last year how you didn't want to be in the photo op because you weren't in the shot? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, you're going to be in it this time. I had to draw me being chased by them. So I did my first self-portrait, and it's me being chased them, and it's, well, here's the funny thing, I was so proud of it when I finally got it done, and I'm like, wow, I drew myself, this is really cool, you know, I'd never done that before, and I was real proud of it. I posted it on Facebook, and I'm waiting on the compliments to just roll in, you know, and one of the first comments was some guy, he said, you look like Billy Mays selling OxyClean, if you remember the infomercial. And then I look back and I'm like, crap, I do look like him. Crap, you know. So I'll sign them. If I sell one, I'll sign it, These Zombies Hate OxyClean, to anybody that's old enough to get the joke. But it's a lot of fun. And like I said, my wife loves it because sometimes – some of those guys will come, like if we're doing a show, they'll come to my house and stay overnight before we go somewhere else to a show. So she's like, I've got Walker staying in my house. You know, she loves it.
Yeah. Well, it has been awesome having you on tonight, Eric. And again, tell people where they can see you or find you.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
one more time.
EddiePrice.net. EddiePrice.net. And you can find everything that I got going on through links on my website.
And well, I have one more request from you, Eddie.
Oh, yeah.
You were talking about being a drug addict and a dealer and everything earlier.
Yes.
I'm giving you a chance to be yourself now. What would you tell a young person right now that wants to be an artist or whatever, but they've got that issue being in their life?
I'm glad you asked me that, because one of the things that is my favorite thing to do at shows is when people see my art, it gives me street cred. They want to hear my story. And, you know, I'm a pastor, and so I'm what you'd call an evangelical.
Right.
I want to tell people the good news anywhere I can. And so my story gives me the chance, but if it weren't for my art, there's so many people that would not darken the doors of a church because, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, they went to church when they were a kid, they were disillusioned by something, or they got hurt by somebody, or whatever it is, or they're, you know, the family that they brought up in never went, or whatever. And so I see a lot of unchurched people, as we call them, atheists, agnostics, what you call pagan, Wiccans, you name it. I see them all. I meet them all, and I love them all. And they want to hear my story, and I've never had anybody get offended from me telling them about my beliefs. I've had them debate me, but not be offended. And I say all that to say this: one of my favorite things to do is challenge young people, because I have so many young people that come up to me, and they'll say, you know, I like to draw. I'm like, well, let's see it. And half the time sometimes they may have a little portfolio with them because they want to show it. And then sometimes they try to make an excuse like, oh, I don't have any with me. I'm like, have you got a cell phone? Yeah. I bet you got pictures of it on your cell phone. Let's see it. And they always do. And so I look at it and I give them a pep talk, what I call the pep talk. I'm like, I'll tell them anything they want to ask me about technique, I'd be more than happy to share. Anything they want to talk about the philosophy of being an artist, I love to talk about that as well. But then I always tell them, do what you love, and if this is what you love, don't let anything stop you from doing it. And even if you never get anywhere as far as career-wise, that's not why you do it initially. You do it because you love it. And if there's anything in the way of that, get rid of it. And that could go for drugs or, you know, any bad habit that, you know. But I've had so many great responses because they'll go on my website, then they'll contact me through social media and go, thank you for talking to me. One guy, he was asking me how to get into my own show, and I said, I'll tell you everything I know. And then he said, well, I'm not sure what genre my art would fit into. And I said, you know what? Make your own genre, and then I'll rip you off when you're rich and famous. How about that? And so then about a month later, he said, I got into my first show. He was so excited. He messaged me on Facebook. And that was cool that I felt like I had a hand in that, you know, to inspire him. Well, then a lady made her son show me his art. And he was in that kind of everything is stupid phase in his teenage years. You know, everything's dumb, right. You know, that kind of attitude. And she said, show him your art. And he's like, he don't want to see my stupid art. And I'm like, yes, I do. So I gave him the pep talk. About a week after that, she contacted me through Facebook and said, thank you for spending the time talking to my son. You didn't know it, but he had quit school right before we went to that convention and met you. After your talk, he went back because he wants to go to art school. So that's awesome. You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or I've had people that I tell them my story and they have a family member that has those same issues that I once had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm saying, well, hey, reach out to them. Don't be too scared. One of the biggest problems with substance abuse and the family dynamics is people won't say anything because they're afraid to. When what they don't realize is the addict is dying to be helped and they don't know how to reach out. And that was me at one time. You know, I wanted help, but I didn't know. Only way I knew to cope with life was drugs. You know, then it became a job and not just a habit. So I did not know how to cope with life and reach out to others. All I knew how to do was get high and forget about it for a little while, you know. So I tell people, hey, don't be afraid to speak up to that person in your life because they're wanting to hear something from you. Whether they could be giving you all the signals that leave me alone that you can imagine, but that's not where they're at. They want you to help them, you know. So I love doing that. I love, like I said, challenge and inspire anywhere I can go. And because somebody took the time to do that for me. You know, so that's my way of paying it forward, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the reason I was just wanting to give you a chance to do that. So.
Yeah.
It has been wonderful having you on, Eddie.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you guys.
Are you guys? If you're up around Tennessee, give me a holler, Eddie.
All right. Are y'all going to be at the show, the Imaginarium show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Look forward to meeting you guys in person.
Yeah, we'll have to hang out, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, we'll arm wrestle.
There you go.
That's fine.
Well, that's another reason to come to Imaginarium, everyone. See Eddie Price and his amazing 3D work and maybe get yourself turned into a zombie.
Yeah, and then arm wrestle me and it's 50% off.
Oh, there you go. All right, well, thank you for coming on, Eddie. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. Same to you guys. Have a great night.
You too.
Well, and enjoy the rest of your drive home and the Walmart parking lot.
I'm fixing to go in.
All right. Be careful.
Oh.
Night, everybody.
Good night.